Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Ms. Johnny Nazarian, Education Program Manager at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Bella. As mentioned, my name is Johnny Nazarian, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop titled Participating in Decisions About Your Care. And actually, this workshop is a part of a series, our Life with Cancer series. The next part of this will be a week from today on May 13th, and that will be on for caregivers, care coordination for your loved one living with cancer and other health problems. Lastly, this activity is supported by the Anna Fuller Fund, and we'd like to thank them for the support of today's program. Now to start, I just want to let you know how many people we have on the call today. We have over 220 participants, primarily from the United States, from rural, urban, and suburban communities. We also have a number of international participants from Canada and the Philippines, so it is a global call. We are delighted to have all of you on this program today and that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. And now I'm going to introduce our first speaker, and our first speaker is Dr. Lydia Shapira, and Dr. Shapira is Professor of Medicine Oncology, Stanford University School of Medicine, Director, Cancer Survivorship Program at Stanford Comprehensive Cancer Center. And Dr. Shapira will be discussing what to do when presented with multiple treatment options, understanding your treatment choices and follow-up care plan, your relationship with your healthcare team, and tips on self-advocacy and advocating with your healthcare team, as well as your survivorship care plan. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Shapira.
Thank you so much for inviting me to participate, and wow, do we have a lot to cover today. So in the next few minutes, I'm just going to give you a little sweep about all of these things. And remember, I am a treating oncologist, so my perspective is sort of informed by what I know and what I do. So when you're presented with multiple treatment options, I think what's really important is to start by understanding the goal of treatment. What is each option trying to achieve? Are we intending to cure or control the cancer? Are we seeking relief from symptoms? So once you have understood that, then it's important sometimes to ask for a clear comparison of options. What are the expected benefits in terms of either survival or symptom improvement? What are the risks? What are the side effects of each? How long do these treatments last, and how intense are they? How is it going to impact on my daily life? And for some people, it may be important to know if this treatment is given through an intravenous line that requires coming into an infusion center or hospitalization, or perhaps it just can be given as pills. It's important also to know what testing will be done, and sometimes cost could also affect the decision. Clarify what matters most to you. If the treatments are intended to improve quality of life or length of life, this may also factor into your decision making and your tolerance of risk, your tolerance for side effects, your personal responsibilities. How will this impact on work or caregiving responsibilities, and perhaps also your emotional and spiritual priorities? The next important thing is to understand uncertainty. And I know that many doctors just give you statistics, but all of these things involve probabilities, and there are no guarantees sometimes. So I think it's important to try to really understand, you know, what you know about what this treatment is trying to accomplish. What are the outcomes? What happens if this treatment doesn't work? Is there another alternative or possibility? And this is a time, and I know one of my colleagues will address this later, sometimes if all these things aren't quite clear, this could be a time to even think about getting a second opinion. Ask about clinical trials. In some situations, clinical trials may also open up possibilities Clinical trials refers to treatment options using either drugs or combinations of drugs, devices, or procedures that are not yet the standard, but are looking, start with a standard and are looking perhaps for innovation, new things. And it could give you access to a drug that perhaps is in the pipeline, but may have the promise of helping you more than a standard treatment. Take time if you can. Some situations, of course, are emergencies. But if you can, take time to make a decision, but not too much. Sometimes just waiting for that decision can increase the feeling of chaos and the feeling of anxiety. So it's important to try to figure out what you need to decide and how you're going to decide. You might need a decision aid. Ask if there is one, and maybe have somebody in your support system help you with this. I also want to really stress how important it is to communicate openly with a care team. If you don't understand, if you ask, you need to ask, can you just tell me about this in a different way? What do you recommend? Revisit the decisions as needed. So as we go on to understanding the treatment choices and follow-up care plan, it's important to know sometimes exactly what your diagnosis is and the stage. What type of cancer do you have? Understand the purpose of the treatment and learn the basics of each treatment option. Ask how treatment success will be measured, and make sure that you understand what it is that your oncology team is defining as success for you. It may be relieving symptoms, it may be a cure, but you don't know that unless you're absolutely clear and you've discussed this. You need to know also who to contact in the team and when. Who can you call if you have urgent symptoms? Who to contact for routine questions, and what counts, what do they think is an emergency. So from there, let's move on to the relationships, which I think are key here. Think of care, if you can, as a partnership. The partners collaborate. Partners may not always agree on everything. You're not a passive recipient of care. You're an active member of the team. And your care team needs to be interested, we hope, in learning from you, learning who you are. What's important to you, how well you tolerate or not certain medications. You're central to this team. So good care depends on sharing information, trusting, and, you know, being open and tell them what's on your mind. I often tell my patients that I have good intentions, but I'm not a mind reader. So it's really important to create the conditions, you know, where you feel that you actually are included in the team. Continuity also matters, so whenever possible, try to see same clinicians. It may not be every member that's the same, but try to have some continuity. It's okay to ask for clarification if you don't understand something. It's okay to ask for plain language explanations, and you absolutely deserve to have time to ask your questions. Some tips for self-advocacy are these. Write down your two or three top concerns. Bring somebody with you if you can, or maybe your phone and have somebody listen with you. Bring your medications. Ask questions until it makes sense to you. And if you need to, ask them to explain things in a different way. Speak up about early side effects. Again, there are many things we don't know. Some things we can measure in blood tests, but some things depend only on your participation and willingness to communicate what you're feeling as you're getting treatment. So advocating with your healthcare team is something that I also wanted to talk about. And I think my take home here is that it's great if you can have that partnership and you're not fighting one another, but together you feel that you are reviewing a plan, that you are understanding one another, and that if you need more people to help, you know, you need a referral or you need a second opinion, that you feel comfortable asking for that. And finally, let me tell you a little bit about what we mean by a survivor care plan. At the end of treatment, it's helpful to have a written summary of your cancer treatment and what comes next. Knowing that and having that helps you navigate our healthcare system, which is often quite fragmented, and understand what treatment you received, for example, surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, name the chemotherapy drug, figure out what the follow-up schedule is, when do you see a member of the care team, and who do you see, who's going to order your follow-up tests, who are you going to call if you still are having some symptoms or problems. It explains also some possible late effects, meaning some of the complications of your cancer treatment that may not show up until years later. It should tell you also who to contact. And it helps coordinate care, and that's something that we're going to come to a little later in the program, between the oncology team and your primary care doctor or perhaps other specialists involved in your care. And finally, the Survivor Care Plan may give you some tips also and guidance on healthy living, such as nutrition, exercise, and also emotional well-being. So with that, I will stop and turn it right back to you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Shapira, for that wonderful presentation. You really highlighted the importance of staying informed, shared decision-making, having open communication and inclusion in your care, as well as the many tips and suggestions that you provided, and lastly, touching on that survivorship care plan. So thank you so much again. And our next speaker is Dr. Jay Ross, and Dr. Ross is an assistant attending psychologist, Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Science, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, assistant professor of psychology and clinical psychiatry, Weill Cornell Graduate School of Medical Sciences. And Dr. Ross will be discussing coping with the practical, social, and emotional challenges of cancer, as well as how a cancer diagnosis affects family, partners, and loved ones. It is my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Ross.
Thank you so much, Joni, and thank you for inviting me to be here again. And I want to welcome our listeners and acknowledge the effort that it takes to be here, whether you're here gathering information or trying to find support or simply want to make sense of something that still feels new or uncertain, showing up in this way matters. I'm going to talk about something a little different. When cancer enters a life, it doesn't only affect the body, it changes our daily life, and it changes how people relate to each other. In my work, I sit with patients and families inside these changes, and one thing becomes very clear very quickly. People are not only coping with cancer, they're trying to take care of each other within it. And that includes the practical demands of treatment, the emotional impact of the experience, the ways it affects relationships with the people around them. For the person living with cancer, life can start to feel organized around the illness. There's appointments, treatment, fatigue. At times it can feel like a full-time job. And then there's the mind asking, what if? What happens next? Is this working? And there's another layer that often goes unspoken. That's not feeling like yourself, not being able to show up in the ways you once did. I often hear people say, I should be able to do more, or I hate having to ask for help. You've probably had some of those thoughts yourself. And alongside that, often guilt for relying on others, worry about how this is affecting the people you love. Sometimes even the quiet thought, I don't want to be a burden. For many people, the emotional experience doesn't move in a straight line. It can feel like a roller coaster, moments of steadiness followed by waves of fear, frustration, or uncertainty that can come on quickly and without much warning. That up and down experience is not a sign that you're not coping well. It often means you're responding to something that feels uncertain and high stakes. And at the same time, loved ones are having their own experience. They're worried too. They're trying to figure out what to say it, how not to say the wrong thing. A partner sitting in an appointment, trying to listen carefully while also managing their own fear. And then coming home and stepping into roles they may not have had before. Caregiver, organizer, advocate. Trying to hold things together in ways they didn't have to before. And many are asking themselves, how do I stay strong for them? How do I not make this harder? So something very human starts to happen. The person with cancer holds back, not wanting to worry their family. The family holds back, not wanting to upset the person with cancer. And everyone is trying to take care of each other at the same time. And often that protection shows up in ways that are hard on both sides. A partner may start watching more closely, noticing everything, saying things like, you shouldn't be doing that, or be careful. And that comes from care and often from worry. But the person with cancer may experience that as pressure or even a loss of freedom, especially when something else has shifted internally, a sense that time matters more now, that what feels meaningful has become clearer, and that difference isn't always spoken out loud. Sometimes that tension isn't about what's happening, it's about what each person is trying to protect. And beyond our close relationships, there's another layer people are often navigating: friends, extended family, community. We ask ourselves questions like, who do I tell? When do I tell them? How much do I share? Some people find themselves managing a lot of incoming support: text messages, calls, phone messages, people wanting updates. And while that support comes from care, it can also become overwhelming. I hear people say, I'm grateful and I'm exhausted. I don't have the energy to respond to everyone. I feel pressure to update people even when I don't feel up to it. And often there's that question of how much to share, wanting support, but also wanting privacy. That tension is very real. A few small shifts can make a difference. First, say a little more of what's true. You can say, this is hard. I don't always know what to say, but I'm here. Or even, I'm having a harder day today. Small truths give the other person a way to meet you. Second, I would suggest allowing for imperfection. There isn't a perfect way to do this. Support doesn't have to be said exactly right to be meaningful. Third, notice your mind. Both patients and loved ones have a mind that jumps to what-if thinking, and that's a protective system. And in the face of something like cancer, it can become even more active, sometimes even hypervigilant, trying to anticipate every possible scenario that could go wrong. The goal isn't to eliminate those thoughts. That's impossible. But notice them, and then gently choose where your attention goes in that moment. And when it comes to managing support, it's okay to set small boundaries. It might look like choosing one or two people to share updates with and allowing them to pass information along, or saying, thank you for thinking of me. I may not be able to respond to every message, but it means a lot to know you're there. Or I'll share updates when I have the energy. Support is meaningful, but it doesn't require you to be available all the time. And in close relationships, sometimes a simple shift in how we speak can open things up. Saying, I know you care about me. Can I share what feels important to me right now? Cancer changes daily life. It changes roles, and it changes how people find their way to each other. What I hope you take with you is something simple. If things feel harder between you and the people you love right now, if communication feels strained or distance has crept in, it may not be because something is wrong between you. It may be because each of you is trying in your own way to take care of each other. And sometimes that care gets expressed as worry or silence or trying to get it exactly right. The work is not to do this perfectly. The work is to find small ways to let each other in. A little more honesty, a little more room for imperfection, a little more willingness to say what matters. Because even here, especially here, connection is still possible. You are not meant to carry this alone, even from each other. So thank you for listening to me today, share this reflection, and I look forward to hearing your Q&As afterwards.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ross, for that incredibly insightful presentation today, as well as providing some suggestions for our participants. I'm sure that there will be questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much again. And our next speaker is Ms. Yue Jung, and Ms. Jung is a PA working in genitourinary medical oncology at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. Ms. Jung will be discussing selecting a cancer care team and treatment facility, getting copies of your medical reports to review with your team, how to anticipate, prevent, and manage the side effects of treatment, as well as when and how to seek a second opinion. It is my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Jung.
Hello, thank you, Johnny. And it is my great honor to be here with this very diverse and, very knowledgeable panel. So, thank you, Dr. Shapira and Dr. Ross, for laying the grounds about all the relationships surrounding a cancer journey. I will be talking about some planning and decision-making in this process. And for our patients and loved ones, your own values and ongoing communication within your support network are very crucial in this process. And I will acknowledge that my presentation is shaped by my experience working at MD Anderson Cancer Center, which is a large academic center in the U.S., and I am definitely more than happy to hear about different opinions and experiences. So first, let's talk about selecting a cancer team and a treatment facility. So essentially, you will be making some decisions about selecting a place and also selecting your people. So when it comes to place, in the United States of America, there are 74 national cancer institution designated cancer centers. Among those 74, there are 9 clinical cancer centers and 57 comprehensive cancer centers that treat patients. These centers are spread throughout 37 states and the District of Columbia. Most of those places are academic centers in large cities, where they also train future clinicians like physicians, PAs, nurse practitioners. Many of them also collaborate with community cancer centers. So for example, MD Anderson Cancer Center, Stanford, and also Memorial Sloan Kettering are all comprehensive cancer centers that have the NCI designation. Now, what if you don't live in one of those big cities with close access to these comprehensive cancer centers? There are also centers in the community, even in rural areas, that have Commission on Cancer Accreditation. This accreditation is a voluntary accreditation given by the American College of Surgeons, and they are our important community partners that can take very good care of patients. So some examples, in Texas, we have Texas Oncology. In upstate New York, I know of Bassett Cancer Institute that also has this accreditation. And some of the VA, Veteran Affair hospitals also have this COC accreditation, but not all of them have it. So it's important to actually look them up. And it's also important to, it's possible to have a local team that's close to you while you're also maintaining relationship with an oncologist at an academic center. So at least in my team at MD Anderson, we very frequently collaborate with local teams. So the patient might receive their treatment every few weeks or even every week locally because it's closer to them and it's easier for them to access that care. But they come back to see us every few months so we can do our restaging imaging studies just to make sure that we're still on the right track. And then we also need to select your team. So this is when you choose your people. And I am a physician assistant, and I am proud to be one, but I will say the key in this process is to choose the right physician, because a good physician tends to assemble a good team of nurses and PAs or nurse practitioners, and they're also very often well connected with providers in other departments and other institutions. You want your team to be familiar with your diagnosis. So good questions to ask is, does this team treat your type of cancer? Are they experienced with this type of cancer? This is especially important if you have a rare type of cancer. One example is that we, in my team, we treat adrenal cancer, which is very, very rare. And so in this case, it's very important that you go to the right team. You also want to make sure that your physician is up to date with research and clinical trials, like Dr. Shapiro mentioned, because this is where we stay up to date and stay on the cutting edge of research and try to give you the most effective and the newest treatment that you may have. And you also want to make sure that they're open to collaboration with other teams and professions. And most importantly, you want to make sure that they communicate well. Nothing is more frustrating than a patient trying to reach out to a physician and their team, and you don't get a response back for days. And you may get in contact with a medical oncologist, a surgeon, or a radiation oncologist. And any one of them could be the leading or the primary oncology team for you, depending on the stage of your disease, also your type of disease. Some other considerations when you are choosing your place to go. Cost is definitely a big one. In the U.S., insurance coverage sometimes can dictate where you can go. And so it's good to ask beforehand whether they accept your insurance. Logistics is also important. This is why you sometimes may have two clinical teams taking care of your cancer. Because if you have a very good physician, but you live very far away from them and you're not able to travel to see them regularly, then it's not as good as having a team that's close to you and familiar with you in your area. And of course, personality is a consideration as well. You want to be working with a team that you get along well with, that fits your communication styles, and you basically like them as people. And next, I will talk a little bit about seeking a second opinion. So some key time points where seeking a second opinion is the most valuable. One is when you're first diagnosed. If you don't feel comfortable with the diagnosis, or if you are given a very rare cancer diagnosis, then this is a good time to seek a second opinion. Make sure that your diagnosis is correct. And then the other one is if you feel hesitant to go with the first recommendation given by your first team. So for example, if you feel like the treatment plan is coming with significant risk and you're worried about side effects or recovery from surgery or any of the toxicities. A third good time point to seek a second opinion is if you have already started on a treatment, but it's not working for you, whether it's because you are seeing disease progression while you are taking this kind of medication, or if this treatment is just too toxic to you, you're having too many side effects that's affecting your daily normal activities. So if those things happen, it's good to seek a second opinion, or simply if you just want peace of mind. You want to make sure that you're on the right track with your treatment or with the diagnosis. So if possible, get a second opinion before you start a new treatment, whether it's your first, first kind of treatment, or if you have already tried some other treatment and you want to see what's the plan for changing treatment. And when you are seeking a second opinion, there are things that you can do that can facilitate the conversation. One is you want to make sure that you have a good summary of your journey so far. And this may already be in your current oncologist's note. So you can review the notes from them. In the US, all the patients have the right to review their own medical record. So you want to make sure that their note has the following information. One is the time of the diagnosis. When were you diagnosed? How was it discovered? What symptoms did you have at the time? And then you also want to have a track record of the kinds of treatments that you've had so far. If you've had surgery, you want to write down the date of the surgery, the type of surgery, what has been removed, and also the pathology report from the surgery. If you've had radiation in the past, you want to have a record of the date of the radiation and also where it was radiated. Is it in an organ? Is it in bone, for example? And of course, with the systemic treatments such as chemotherapy, immunotherapy, these kind of things that you take either in the IV or in a pill, you want to have the record of the first day of the treatment, the kind of side effects that you have experienced, any complications. For example, did you have to go to the hospital for any kind of infection during this treatment? Or if you have already finished this treatment, you want to record the reason for discontinuation. And you also want to write down, if you've had disease progression, where did this progression occur? Was it because something was abnormal in your labs? Was something observed in the scans? Or is there any, and also like specify the location of that disease progression. Is it in the lymph nodes, in an organ, in your bones, or sometimes is it in your skin? And then the next question to include in your summary is if you've had any molecular or genomic testing. This is kind of like a genetic testing for the cancer. So that can help inform our future decision. And this is especially important when we're considering a change of treatment. You also want to include in your summary if you've had any other health issues. Are they ongoing or have they resolved? Do you take any medications every day for these issues? One example is if you have hypertension. We want to make sure that your blood pressure is well controlled before we start you on any cancer medications that can increase your blood pressure. So when you go seek a second opinion, you want to have your medical records. And like I said before, this may already be in the note of your current oncology team. And so there are different parties that can help you obtain this medical records. So you may need to request your medical record to be released from your current oncology team. This usually involves you filling out a form stating that you allow the record release and you want to designate the receiver of your record. And sometimes we like patients to also have their own original information, such as the actual pictures of the scans that they've had. Some facilities can transfer the record electronically to the designated second opinion place. Sometimes we ask people to hand carry a CD with all the information on it. One quick note about a USB drive. A lot of the hospitals in the US don't allow access to the USB drive just for their, you know, IT security concerns. So CD is usually the better way to go. And you also want to collect your pathology reports. And the new patient intake teams can also help with the record transfer. They can also request the tissue specimen from your current facility to get it to the new place to have a new pathology review. Next, I will talk a little bit about side effects and during the treatment. So this topic is most relevant if you are going to receive systemic treatment. Again, so this is any IV treatment, or you may be taking a pill for that, because in both of these ways, when you receive the treatment, it goes everywhere in your body, okay? So when you are planning to receive this type of treatment, there are good questions to ask. So I always tell patients about what to anticipate, but you can always ask. So ask what to watch out for during the treatment, right? So there are tiers of things to watch out for. So you can ask what is temporary and self-limiting that you can just watch at home or treat at home. You want to ask when is a good time to let the team know that you're having new symptoms. And the highest tier of this is when do I need to go to the ER right away? So these are the warning signs that you should know about. One example is for people receiving immunotherapy, because the immunotherapy is basically activating your immune system to fight cancer. Sometimes people may have some inflammatory symptoms. One example is diarrhea. So diarrhea is a very common side effect of any kind of systemic treatment. So I tell my patients, if it's just 1 or 2 days, you can wash it at home, especially if it's mild, just 1 or 2 times a day. Just make sure that you're drinking plenty of water and also replenish your electrolytes by eating a balanced diet. If it's ongoing, if it's been going on every day, but like 3 or 4 times, but it doesn't affect your energy level and it doesn't affect your normal activities, then you should let your team know. And they may consider doing some labs, check your stool study, making sure there's no infection. And if everything looks good, they may recommend some over-the-counter antidiarrheal. But if you have a sudden onset, large volume diarrhea that's more than 5 times a day, causing, you know, general weakness, you just feel like you have no energy, you are not able to carry out your normal activities, or if you have a high fever or if you see blood in the stool, that's the time to go to the ER. So these are the main things to watch out for. And of course, we tell patients, whenever you have any questions, this is a lot of information. If there's anything that's unclear, please ask us. We're here to help. So with that, I will turn it back to Johnny.
Thank you so much, Ms. Jung, for that excellent presentation. You covered a great deal of information today, so I'm sure that there will be questions for you during the Q&A. And our next presenter is Ms. Sarah Naipzada. Ms. Naipzada is an oncology social worker here at Cancer Care. She'll be discussing Cancer Care's free national programs and services, as well as our helpline and website. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Naipzada.
Thank you so much, Joni, and thank you all for taking the time to be with us today and discussing such an important topic. For those of you that might not know, Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization that provides free professional support services and information to help people manage the emotional, practical, and financial challenges of cancer. Our comprehensive services include resource navigation, online support groups, educational programs, community programs, publications, and potential financial and co-payment assistance for medications. Excuse me. To give you more information about our services, our resource navigation service involves a short-term strength-based approach to help address and overcome health disparities and other barriers to care, including financial, practical, psychosocial, communication, employment, care coordination, and support barriers. Our team of navigators provide cancer-focused guidance, referrals to resources. They help patients improve communication with their medical teams and loved ones, and practical information about treatment. Our national online support groups take place using a password-protected messaging board and are led by oncology social workers like myself, who offer support and guidance. These groups are held for 15 weeks at a time, and you can register through our website to join the online support groups that are specific to you. Our groups vary based on the type of cancer that you might have, as well as groups targeted to specific populations, including the LGBTQ plus community, young adults, and those who are post-treatment or caregivers. The cancer care website, cancercare.org, we also have a wide range of reading material and educational supports there as well, organized by cancer type and topic. These include recorded Connect education workshops like this one, publications, our podcast, Cancer Out Loud, where you can listen to view conversations with people with cancer, caregivers and survivors and others impacted by cancer. People can also register for many of our other programs online or through our helpline. We also can connect you to Magnolia Purpose and Planning, which is a website designed to help support and provide a connection to financial and legal resources for those affected by cancer and future planning. As others may have mentioned in this call, navigating a cancer diagnosis is something you don't have to navigate on your own, whether you're a patient or a caregiver. You can call our helpline at 1-800-813-4673. If you live in the U.S. and Puerto Rico, you have access to cancer care oncology social workers who can help connect you with support. Building community and reaching out for help isn't always easy, and it's important to maintain your support systems and coping strategies when dealing with the cancer diagnosis. I want to thank everyone for your time today and interest in our topic. I'm going to turn this back to Joni. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Maibzada, for that wonderful presentation and comprehensive overview of all that we offer here at Cancer Care. Thank you. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A. We're going to take as many of your questions as possible. I'm going to ask Bella to explain to you how to queue up for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
Great. Okay, and our first question here is for Ms. Naibzada. Where do you recommend I start looking for a social worker? I started seeing one at my cancer center, but would like to look elsewhere.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for that question. I do believe the helpline is a great place to start. Of course, once you follow the line, you are connected with an oncology social worker. And then depending on your needs, they can really help either provide some brief emotional support and connect you with other resources to cater to what you're specifically looking for.
Okay, great. And then can you just provide the helpline number once more?
Yes, absolutely. So that's 1-800-813-4673.
Great. Thank you so much. Okay, and we have a question here for Ms. Jung. Is there a site that shows which NCI centers are connected to a cancer center in your local area?
Good question. So, there's a list of the NCI designated cancer centers, and I believe on the NCI website, you may also be able to see a map of where those cancer centers are. So I would say just you can do a web search to look for those locations.
Great. Thank you so much, Ms. Jung.
Yep.
I have a question here for Dr. Ross. I was just diagnosed with cancer, and now knowing too much information about what's to come is adding to my stress. Can I ask my doctor to tell my spouse all of these details in case I become ready down the road? And is that fair to ask of my spouse?
That's a very meaningful question. That's something we always worry about because we don't want to feel like we're a burden or putting undue burdens on our loved ones. But one thing that I'm taking away from today's teleconference is that it takes a village to manage cancer, and it's a collaborative collaborative effort. It requires good communication. And so I would maybe have that conversation with your partner and just say, you know, sometimes when I go in to the appointments, I'm nervous and everything sounds like the adult voice in a Charlie Brown cartoon, you know, when they're talking to me. Would it be okay if you went in with me and just heard some things too? So we have a couple of sets of ears listening to things and ask their permission if they feel okay going in with them, with you, and giving them, you know, a specific goal, you know, a chore, or I don't want to say chore, but, you know, a specific goal for them to achieve for you while they're in the room with you, and see how that goes.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Ross, for that answer. Okay. We have a question
here. I'll just add one thing to that. Oftentimes,
of course,
someone's partners don't have time to go, or maybe the partner gets more upset than, you know, even the patient does. And so they'll have a friend or someone go with them. So it's okay to have someone go with you to your appointments.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I have a question here. It's for Dr. Shapira and also Ms. Jung, if Dr. Shapira, if you'd like to go first. How do you handle when you have cancer, your spouse has cancer, the same time, but you have no relatives to help you? Can you talk about some available resources to provide assistance?
I think that's a great question, and unfortunately it comes up not infrequently. I think the way to think about this is sort of the support network. There are some actually interesting and very creative ways of mapping it out on a piece of paper. There's an atlas of support networks, and that, so the idea is that it, even if you and your spouse both are in a moment in, or a time in your life where you need help, to try to identify what needs you have and who in your support network can help, maybe people that you wouldn't normally think of reaching out to. In our country, certainly we often have relatives who mean well but live very far away and can't physically drive to appointments or pick up a medication, but they may be able to help with coordination of services or dealing with insurance or even participate in a telehealth visit, which is something that we didn't have access to even years ago. So in these situations, it may be good, for instance, to involve somebody on one of your health team, such as a social worker, to help you define what needs you have and try to think about who in your immediate circle, and then perhaps through other agencies or by thinking more creatively about your support network, can actually help with these tasks.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Shapira. And I wanted to open it up to our other speakers, if anyone else has anything else they would like to add in terms of resources or opportunities for support.
This is Yue. So I just want to mention that, yeah, so I do definitely agree with Dr. Shapira that your oncology team is the best place to get started. We very often ask help from our social workers to talk with patients with, you know, all kinds of needs that they may have. And sometimes they may already have a strong support network in their community, like that's their village that they can rely on. And I also want to mention that whatever cancer diagnosis you have, most likely there is an organization about that. Most likely there is a group on social media that you can reach out to. Sometimes I see people coordinate their trip to their cancer treatment. They make friends because of their cancer diagnosis. So there are definitely different ways to seek help or even develop new friendships.
Great. Thank you so much, Ms. Jung.
This is Dr. Ross. Can I make one more follow-up comment on the question that was asked? Because I think sometimes in our efforts to protect each other from worry or concerns or feeling like a burden when we're dealing with cancer. Our loved ones want to help, but they don't know how. So sometimes when we give them a specific responsibility or ask them if they can help in a certain way, they're actually eager to do it because now they have something concrete to hold on to. They know how they can be of assistance. They know how they can help. Because so much of cancer, people feel like there's so much that we have no control over, that we just don't know what's going on. And so having little, I'll call them lighthouses, you know, something to guide us, something to hold on to steady us through the storm, can actually be helpful. So don't be afraid to ask someone if they can do something for you, but also be okay if they say they can, it's too much for them. You know, ask elsewhere, because you're trying to build a village to help you through this.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you all for those very insightful answers. Provided a lot of information in this session for that participant today. Okay. And so now I'm going to ask our speakers to provide takeaways. Just a brief takeaway for the end of the call. We'll start with Dr. Shapira, then Dr. Ross, Ms. Jung, and then Ms. Naibzada. Okay. So Dr. Shapira.
Yes, thank you for that. I would say to go back to one of the comments I made, think of yourself as part of your team and make sure that you have a central role in that team and that you support yourself both in your informal network and through the professionals in the care team, that you find people you can connect with and that you find that support that you need.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Okay, I guess I'll just kind of reiterate what I already said earlier. Sorry, but this is this builds on what Dr. Shapira just said. This is a collaborative effort. You're not doing it alone. Whether it's with your care team, who's keeping a watchful eye on you and helping give you information so you can make informed decisions for yourself. But most of this takes place outside of the exam room, and so. Work with your support network. Use them appropriately and also set appropriate boundaries for yourself so you don't feel overwhelmed with too much support. But use the people who are there willing to show up for you in ways that you feel supportive. And just communicate. It's, you know, there's no right way to do this. You got to kind of just figure it out and you'll make some mistakes along the way, but that's how we figure out how to make it better down the road.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Ross and Ms. Jung.
So I just want to echo what Dr. Shapira and Dr. Ross have said. Collaboration is definitely the key word in your cancer journey. And you are, we are collaborating with you as patients and caregivers. And we're collaborating with different team members and different disciplines, different institutions. And, you know, we want to make sure that our patients go to a reputable cancer center or treatment facility and establish with care with a team that's most appropriate for you. And your experience may be different from online reviews or your friends, and that's okay because you know yourself the best. And of course, like maintain a good record of your journey. So that can also help facilitate the medical decision, making sure that we are giving you the most appropriate treatment.
Thank you so much, Ms. Jung. And Ms. Naibzada?
Yes, I just wanted to emphasize that while the cancer experience can often feel really isolating. We're here at Cancer Care to provide that support, whether that's again emotional support, basically through our helpline or providing resources. Please don't hesitate to reach out to Cancer Care. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all so much. As we wrap up, I just want to thank our speakers today. We had a phenomenal panel, and I also want to thank our participants. I want to thank you all for being here. Today's program was particularly exceptional because of the questions that were asked and then how they were answered by our speakers. And now I do want to say a few words for those of you that didn't have your question answered, or if you did have it answered, we'd like you to go back to your healthcare team and ask them your questions. Please remember that you learned a great deal from today's program. We touched on a lot of topics, had a lot of different perspectives today, so I want you to take what you've learned and go back to your treating healthcare team and ask your questions again and again. And then also, as Dr. Shapira mentioned, it's important to know who to contact and when. So we hear that people have a hard time knowing who to contact on weekends, evenings, and holidays. So please reach out to your treating healthcare team to know who to contact during that time. Okay, and lastly, I want to echo what Ms. Naimzada said. I don't want anyone leaving this workshop today feeling as if you are alone, because you are not alone. You have a community of support here at Cancer Care, and we are here to help you. So I appreciate everyone's participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.